Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to a Monday evening edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast. It's Monday evening, so that means we are talking NFL with a round table, because it's still the offseason, although some training camps, I believe, are taking place at some point this week. I am joined, as I am every Monday night, by 49ers Hubs, Evan Swords. Evan, good evening, sir. How are you?
I am well. How are you doing, man?
Not too bad. Not too bad, Evan. I'm also joined by Stephanie Smalls, fantasy extraordinaire. What do we call you? The person that Matthew Berry shouted out this week. Just the rising star where we know, Evan, you and I, we both know that she's going to be too big for this podcast within, like, what, 3 weeks?
Oh, that's fine. I'll just drag her back whether she likes it or not.
No, that will never happen. I will never be too big for this podcast. Thanks for having me on again. Last week, I quite literally slept through the episode. Uninterrupted 18 hours of sleep is something very surprising. So I'm glad that I was able to come back.
But are you feeling better?
I'm definitely feeling better, yeah.
Okay, good. Happy to hear it. Also here, old friend. He has been on this podcast before, Ross Jackson of Locked On Saints. Ross, good evening, sir. How are you?
Hey, brother. Doing very well. Glad to be here with y'all. Such a pleasure to be able to join all three of you. This is really great. I'm really looking forward to this. So I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, I love your work, man. Even if it is New Orleans Saints related, I still respect it. That's how adult I am. And that's how mature I am. I am able to look past the Saints aspect of your work and, appreciate it. So,
I very much appreciate it.
Well, we're going to be talking. It's funny because, like, as we're talking about this, so, like, I'm organizing my new office in the move. I'm looking at my signed Keith Brooking Falcons helmet, my Atlanta Falcons 1970 fact book that my dad got me, like, from that time period in Atlanta, and then the 1998 NFC Champions banner right next to it. So,
I love it.
It's all ready to go. But we will be talking about the NFC South. That is the larger reason Ross is joining us, just as Eric did last week to talk about the NFC North. Our highlight will be the NFC South this week. But to get started, there are some headlines, guys, that I want to start. And this is something that I'm very happy to see, because the odd number is already driving me nuts. I don't like 8-9. I don't like the situation that we're going to find ourselves in with this odd number of games this season. And by no surprise, I don't think the NFL is focused on expanding already to 18 games. Ross, what do you make of the NFL already moving towards 18 games?
Well, it's an interesting thing because one of the clauses in the CBA that recently passed was that they couldn't make a very quick move to an 18-game season after a 17-game season. So they would have to push through some of the things around the CBA, or at least as soon as that provision is lifted, they feel pretty good about moving forward there, that they would be able to. I actually, Chase, like the even number, which probably drives you nuts, or the uneven number, rather. I like the odd number because I like teams not having an even season, either having a winning season or having a losing season, and just helping to create some potential division there between the way that we look at some of these teams. So that's one of the things that I actually kind of like about it. But I do have to say that if they're going to go to an 18-game season, then an additional bye week is going to become a must very quickly, I would imagine.
Evan, what do you think?
I mean, definitely going to need another bye week. I already think we need that at 17 games. But, you know, I understand the slow rollout because the NFL is full of money-hungry psychopaths that don't care about people's health. But it was always going to be 18 games. Like that was always going to be the plan. So it's just like you said, obviously there's some provisions in the CBA to prevent that happening right away, but that's obviously the goal. It's just, you know, slowly taking what they can get as it comes. I don't think it was tangible, but I would have much rather have gone from 16 to 18 than 16, 17, 18. It's just going to look so weird in the record books.
Yeah. And I think back to college football when it was 11 for a long time. And that's something that I don't even remember anymore. I'm just so conditioned to 12 games, but it was 11 for the majority of the time I grew up and I didn't bat an eye, but 12, it just seems right now. Stephanie, what do you make about it? Do you agree more with Evan, with Ross? And if it is Ross, how could you ever agree with a prime number being the right solution to the number of games for an NFL season?
I just think the NFL needs to chill out. Like, let's just calm down for a second. Figure out what is, like, we need to get our bearings after a COVID season. I don't know. You know, everything's about money, and that's what it comes down to. So they're going to add games when they can add games. But, I mean, again, even to Evan's point, like, we got to keep these guys healthy as well. Every week that you add is also adding more pressure on these guys' bodies.
Yeah, but I also just think too, I think they're looking at it where the preseason is just such a waste of everybody's time. Like the fact that they were doing a month of preseason was just insane. The four preseason games, because ultimately what has been the narrative is that the first, what, 6 weeks of the season is basically the NFL's preseason, because that's when they're actually figuring stuff out and working out the kinks, and teams aren't really who they are until that 6-7 game stretch, because they don't treat the preseason with any sort of respect and don't play any of the guys that actually are going to be shaking the rust off in week one, week two. So if you want to eliminate that to expand the number of games, and I understand there will be more bye weeks, but if they're not going to take preseason seriously, then I don't really understand the point of keeping still three. Like, there's just I don't understand the point. Does that make sense, Evan?
I mean, it's okay. I definitely understand where you're coming from, and I agree. I think the 49ers specifically had a lot of issues last year, just in general, of like not really having their players that they needed to play because of like COVID and stuff, like get their reps in. And you just saw how rusty they were. I mean, even the NFL Super Bowl season for the 49ers, right? They had a lot of their main players not start the preseason. And, you know, as we know, that team kind of had a little bit of a slow offensive rollout, even though they won because of their defense. So I would agree. But we just have to find a balance. We got to find a way for the teams to have their players like ready to go and like physically in a good, training regimen to get them ready without having a bunch of injuries.
That's fair. That's fair. Stephanie, what do you think?
I'm trying to like unmute my dog is going crazy, but I agree. There still has to be a plan for these guys. It's more wear and tear. So everyone loves the word injury prone, and you add another week and I promise you we're going to hear a lot of it.
Can we ask what the dog thinks? Cause I personally would love to know the opinion. Talk about it. Like,
I thought it was muted.
Appreciated. It's appreciated.
Evan, as of Friday, the Washington football team and the Indianapolis Colts had the two lowest COVID-19 vaccination rates among the 32 teams in the league per the AP. What do you make of this? And what do you make of some teams still being way below the 85% that the NFL is angling for and being below the 50%? And is it any surprise that it's either of those two teams for you?
You know, DC surprises me, although they're 55% fully vaccinated themselves. Indianapolis, you know, I will say this. It does surprise me because you would obviously want – you think like, oh, the Texas, you know, and all these like, you know, maybe South states or Florida, whatever, right, would have that. So they were kind of random. But what I know is that Washington football team will always find a way to just be one of the shittiest teams in the NFL. And they like to do it in different fashions, right? They're resourceful. They're unique, right? Sometimes it's their owner being a piece of shit. Sometimes it's the organization having issues treating like women terribly. Sometimes it's just treating the players terribly, like Trent Williams. So I just like to know that they keep redefining themselves and finding new ways to suck. It's really like, you know, it's a feel good story.
Ross, what do you think?
They like deserve an award for that. It's like you almost get there, you have like almost a perfect roster, and then how can we just absolutely mess that up? Like, how, let's find a way to make sure that we can't keep that perfect roster and make something out of it.
I am curious though, Ross, like, what do you think though, when you obviously, I think one of the most exciting things for me throughout this whole COVID trying to figure out how we vaccinate people, right? Like Deion Sanders today said, you don't want to win if you're not willing to get vaccinated. That just shows me you don't want to win enough to help your team. Like, do you think that verbiage and that approach has a better chance of getting people vaccinated in the NFL?
No, I really don't. I think that it has to come down to the why as opposed to the what. And I don't think that winning is a strong enough why. I mean, I think that oftentimes when we talk about vaccination misinformation, it's usually connected in such a way to a need of education, right? And in terms of vaccination education, make sure everybody understands like why this is important. You're not just doing it for yourself, you're doing it for others, so on and so forth, all these other things. And so I think that when you try to like challenge somebody to the point where you're insulting them, then they're immediately just going to say no and shut down. There's nothing else to hear here. And I think that when you challenge them the way that Deion Sanders did, it's not really conducive or constructive in terms of the conversation that has to be had around it. And it's not really a conversation, according to Albert Breer over at Monday Morning Quarterback, that like players are willing to have with other players. It's become kind of a taboo topic to bring up, just like as he referenced, like money, religion, and things like that. And so I think that for the most part, when it comes down to this, it has to come down to the organizations who are willing to say, this is why this is important, and then make that information available. The vaccination rate across the NFL skyrocketed once the NFL made clear the provisions around, here's the difference between if you are vaccinated, if you are not vaccinated, and what your season is going to be like. And the NFL has consistently touted over the course of these last couple of months that any teams that are above the 85% vaccination threshold, that things will become sort of substantially easier for those teams, but haven't really been able to come out yet because they're still talking about it and say exactly how. I would imagine that once they come out there and say these are the benefits to being a team that has an 85% vaccination population, then you'll see more of those players come out. If they can understand why they should be doing this, then I think it becomes a little bit easier and the education becomes a part of the process, as opposed to someone challenging them publicly and essentially insulting them like that, right? That doesn't usually work in anything, and it's certainly not going to work when somebody is questioning sort of their medical health in such a way.
I just think it's odd, Ross. Like, it's something that I wonder, and you can only extrapolate from like how your own mind thinks. You can't get into the mind of what an NFL player is thinking, but from my perspective, I would just be like, it's going to make my life easier. Like, I only have so much time in this league, and we already know the shelf life of so many NFL players anyway. Like, the fact that we know that teams are open, like every reporting, you talk about Breer, like it's not just Breer who's reported on this, where it's like teams, if they're faced with a fringe guy versus in the two guys that they're thinking about from the practice squad or whatever, or even just like making the last little bits of cuts, if it's between a vaccinated versus unvaccinated player, they're going to go with the vaccinated player. It's just, from my perspective, I'm just like, that's just odd as a competitor where you're like, man, this could really hurt me and hurt my career. Or this could give a team even more leverage to just move on from me, even if I'm playing really well. And it won't even be like my on the field production. It will just be like their concern over whether or not I'll be available. And that's a real thing. So I wonder from that perspective where I would be just, from my mindset, I would just be like, yeah, even if I was a little like curious or whatever, I would just be like, no, I'm not going to jeopardize this earning time in my life. Like this rare short blip in my life. I'm not going to jeopardize that. That's how I look, but you can't do that, or you can't put that mindset into everybody else. I would be so curious to figure this out.
I agree with you both. I do. I really think that I think there's two different sides of looking at it. Everything Ross said is very true from like an intellectual standpoint, right? Like there's some people that are going to think about things intellectually where they want to know why, and they want to see it rather than just have someone say, you got to go do this. Totally agree. Mm-hmm. But I do think that we are talking about the most competitive human beings on earth. These are quite literally people that not only because of their physical talent, but their like mental fortitude of I have to be the best so that I can win, because all that matters is I win a championship. And I don't know that a lot of people will be manipulated or changed or whatever word you want to use. But I do think that what Deion Sanders said will get some of the people that don't know the education point of it, that don't know the science point behind it, but they were just maybe like, I don't really fuck with taking a vaccine that I don't know anything about. It sounds sketchy. I don't know if I really care. And then you have all of your teammates who have been vaccinated like, hey, fuck off, guy. Like, I don't want to deal with all these COVID protocols. I want to win this season. We don't need distractions. Can you fuck off and figure it out and go get vaccinated? And I think that can move the needle for the people that really don't know any better and haven't done the research themselves.
Yeah, I think that there's probably some truth in that. The only thing is that, I mean, some of that has to come from organizational leadership as well to instill sort of like exactly what Chase was talking about, that like, you know, your inability to be available could cost you a roster spot, and not being vaccinated could cost you availability. So put two and two together here. And that has to come from the organizational leadership. The topic here that we're discussing too happens to be with the Washington football team, who has never had very good organizational leadership. So what are those players being told by their organizations versus what are some of the players being told in other organizations that were quickly over the 85% threshold, like teams like the New Orleans Saints and the Miami Dolphins? Because that's kind of where I would be really interested here, is like everything that we're talking about here, I completely agree with, but everything that we're talking about isn't going to be consistent about how the message of the importance of vaccination is being delivered to NFL players by their organizations. And I have absolutely no doubt that the conversation that we're having is starkly different than the conversation that they're having internally over in the Washington football team facility.
This is wild to me, because I remember Ron Rivera there was a story on PFT like a few weeks back of Ron Rivera bringing in outside side. Like that's when people are like, I don't know enough. And then they bring in somebody to explain it to them and they're like, still no. And it's like, well, your argument was that you didn't know enough and that you wanted to talk to an expert, and they just brought in experts and you're like, still no. So that's why I'm just like, you're just hitting, I don't know. I grow more cynical by the day on this front, because I think it's bad faith on a lot of counts where it's like, I don't know enough. I want to know more. And then they give you an opportunity to learn more and you're like, no thanks. I still not the right kind of information. It's just like, what? I don't know. It's just frustrating. Not frustrating though. Ted Ginn Jr. highlight plays. Very much enjoyed that during my time. Like he was a Saint for a sneaky long amount of time, Ross. What was your favorite Ted Ginn moment in New Orleans?
Well, there's a really good one. He made this really phenomenal catch during an NFC championship game that took place, I think, in 2018. There was something else that happened after that I'm not really sure that I remember anymore and that we need to talk about. It's not important. But he made a catch that looked like it was about to send the New Orleans Saints to the Super Bowl at that point, and then some other stuff happened with whistles not being blown and all these other things. But that was probably like the peak moment for him. And then I always think about the Teddy Bridgewater touchdown throw from him to Ted Ginn Jr. against the classic Tampa 2 against Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a deep post route, and all of a sudden you see Teddy Bridgewater going deep, which you don't see very often. That was a fantastic touchdown as well. Teddy Bridgewater celebrating before Ted Ginn Jr. even caught the pass. And if you know anything about Ted Ginn Jr., you know that he's not a shorthanded receiver for the most part. And so that was a little bit risky, but those are a couple of the big ones that stood out for me. But I mean, what an incredible 14-year career for a guy who was considered a bust after his first three seasons in Miami.
Oh yeah. 100%. And like, that's the one thing that I love about Ted Ginn. Obviously, you know, he played on the 49ers as well. 82-yard punt return touch, you know, was like one of the most exciting plays I've ever seen as a 49ers fan. But that was the thing, right? Like, he didn't have hands, couldn't catch, just couldn't catch. But then you got him up with Colin Kaepernick. You got him with, you know, Cam Newton, right? Obviously, Drew Brees. Like, he just – he wasn't the perfect receiver. He didn't have every tool, but, like, he knew how to make exciting plays, and he gave his all. And, like, there aren't – there aren't a lot of receivers like Ted Ginn. Like, we've had receivers in the past that were so damn fast, and they had that one speed and that one move, but like they never really could figure it out. And I just feel like Ted Ginn was just like constantly coming back every day. Like, I got to find a way to continue to get better and to continue to find, you know, have my own place in the NFL. And I mean, like, exactly what you said, was considered a literal bust. Mm-hmm. And had an incredible, exciting career.
Yeah, I will never forget the Chad Henne play, like the orange Dolphins uniforms and his big time catch there. Yeah. That's like, I remember that Monday Night Football game like it was yesterday. Like, I, for whatever reason, that game stick, like, it will always stick out more. And the fact that like he was the number one receiver, like you mentioned, Evan, with Cam at one point, like that dude just. He stuck around and he figured it out and he did enough. And he was never a true number one or anything like that. But a 14-year career for a guy like him, I think, is pretty amazing. And I think he has nothing to hang his head about when it comes to his career. Guys, this is not on my list, but I wanted to mention this. I forgot to put this in the headlines. I want to kind of be angry about this, but I'm going to leave it to Stephanie, because is Stephanie still here at the moment, or did she dip out for a second before I asked this question to Stephanie?
I think she said, "I can't stand this place. I'm never coming back," and ran away crying. But other than that,
wait, can I guess that you're going to bring up that Saquon Barkley so that he's day to day? Because if that's what it is, then yes, I'm leaving.
No. The Giants aren't on my radar enough to bring that up until they move on from Daniel Jones. I'm okay on that. No, I'm actually talking about a quarterback who is actually good and probably going to the Hall of Fame. Eli Manning and Peyton Manning to headline Okay, can I, like, I want to ask this to you, Stephanie, as someone who knows Eli Manning, you know his press conferences, you know how he is. Do you think this is a good idea? And also, giving people more choices. This is just, like, I've never been more certain of something bombing than this alternate broadcast and, like, trying to get people, the people who like listening to Peyton and Eli, the people, like, my uncles are not going to figure out how to do this different part, like, a different broadcast, and they're like, wait, it's on ESPN2 and it's a mega cast? What even is that? Like, they love Peyton. I go to UT. Like, this is, they love Peyton. I have a cousin who's named after Peyton Manning. They're not going to know how to do this. It's not going to happen.
It'll be fine. The thing is, they don't have to listen to fucking Lewis Riddick anymore. Oh, like, goodness. That is so...
Like, wait, can you tell us how you really feel about that? Like, could you really dive in there?
How fantastic is this? I will absolutely... For years, and this is, like, partly why I probably struggled with certain things, is, like, I used to just watch football with music on, because I cannot even bear to listen. Kaya apparently agrees in the background here, but, like, having these two commentating is so awesome. That is happiness. I'm so excited.
I'm against all of this. Just put them on the Monday Night Football broadcast. What are we doing? No. Just put them on the normal one. We don't need Steve Levy and Brian Greasy and Lewis Riddick.
It's like petty, though. It's like, I'm going to go listen to the Manning brothers on another channel.
But that's just lame. You're just screwing them over. They're like, well, I don't understand any of this. I don't understand.
So here's what I will say. to your point that people won't be able to figure out the technology, the games have been streaming on Amazon now at this point multiple times. It's obviously a very not normal way of watching a football game. People figured it out. I don't think it's going to be that hard to figure out. That said, when you think about the Manning humor, which honestly, like the football player, Eli Manning, here, I mean, I'm just saying like, so like the football player, Eli Manning, obviously hate that man with a passion. He stole the Super Bowl from us, that bastard. I can't feel that pain. I'm not allowed to feel that pain. You have two Super Bowls. I don't even know what that's like. I haven't seen a Super Bowl in my lifetime. I'm 33 years old. And my team has five. I get to have that pain. But my point is that I think the Eli Manning, Peyton Manning humor is one of the best humors, some of the funniest people in the NFL the last 20 years. Their sport, this is SportsCenter where they're getting a tour around campus and they're just like in the back, like slapping each other on the head. And like Peyton's like turn and kick into the butt at the last second. Like this is a humor that like really caters to a younger generation, not like, you know, young, like in the 20s, but like definitely like our young, right? Like, you know, you, Chase and I, who are both washed, right? Like, I think that is the like that is
part of that. Don't
include. Yeah, I think I might be too. Actually,
hey, it's okay. I'm fully washed. I hurt my knee today, and I don't even know how. But I think that Manning generation, like these people, are going to be able to figure out how to watch it, and that's who they're catering towards.
Just move on from Brian Griese. What? Just give let them alternate. Like on Mondays with Lewis Riddick and Steve Libby. Like, just do that.
Stop alternating Lewis Riddick. He's horrible. Yeah. He just shouldn't.
I like Lewis Riddick. I like Lewis. I don't know why. You have a strong disdain. He's fine. I like Lewis Riddick. He's good. Last headline before we move on. Evan, this is. I'm just going to clear the runway for you here because I saw this and I immediately thought of you. Russell Wilson said that his relationship with Pete Carroll is, quote, stronger than ever. And when I say my eyes rolled to the back of my head, like, this is why this dude, I respect him so much as a quarterback, top three quarterback, great, one of the all-time greats. I'm so glad I've been able to watch him as much as I have. The worst personality on planet Earth, and I cannot stand it, and I cannot stand this just, objective lying, like for no reason, like it's stronger than ever. Then why did you ask out? It's stronger than ever, and that's why you wanted to go play for Matt Nagy in Chicago. Scare me with this nonsense. Listen, like this drives me up the wall.
First off, you can't spend a decade with Russell Wilson saying the corniest shit in the world and constantly being the I'm going to have the Mr. like I'm a professional quarterback line every single time and then get confused when he does the same fucking thing again. At the end of the day, Russell Wilson does not have the capacity to say anything other than what he thinks the starting quarterback should say, right? Like, I mean, like he's Jimmy Garoppolo when it comes to press conferences without any of the charm. He just says it like a fucking psychopath robot, but that's fine. That's fine because he's one of the greatest quarterbacks that we've seen in the last three decades. That's fine. But to your point, Russell Wilson is basically doing the same thing that NFL coaches say when they're like, blah, blah, blah is our quarterback. Blah, blah, blah is going to be our quarterback for the foreseeable, you know, like this is our quarterback. Right. And then he gets traded a week later. Like Russell Wilson doesn't give a shit about Pete Carroll. He hates Pete Carroll. I'm sure they hate each other. I'm sure
like we Pete know Carroll that Pete takes- Carroll was scouting quarterbacks. We know that he was looking at options. If Russell Wilson, like with after paying Russell Wilson, we know that he was scouting. We know that they've been looking at quarterbacks.
How many times do you think Pete Carroll has burned a picture of Russell Wilson with jet fuel? How many times? Multiple times. Yeah, like literally flies probably little airplanes into photos of Russell Wilson. And that's just, but Russell Wilson is supposed to say that. My relationship with Pete Carroll is stronger than ever. Whatever.
It just drives me nuts. Like it's just,
they're going to be a bad football team next year.
I don't think they're going to be bad, but like Ross, what do you think? Are we overreacting to this quote or do you think this is something?
They're going to be bad.
Stephanie, what was that? Did you think that they were going to be bad? Is that what that was?
I just don't think that, I think that everyone expecting, you know, even like the Cardinals to be worse than them is ridiculous to me. And I think that the Seahawks are definitely not going to be as good as everyone is expecting.
A tradition unlike any other. People expecting the Seahawks to finally crumble. Ross, what do you think?
Just like expecting them to be good, though, also.
They're always good. They're just not great. They're always good.
Exactly. They're in purgatory. They're in purgatory.
No. Hold on. I think there's a difference. And sorry, Ross, for like, I would love to just shut the fuck up, but I do have to say this because it's the Seahawks. They are always good in relation to how you, like, you expect a 10-win football team to be good. Sure. Russell Wilson is literally one of the best quarterbacks ever. They shouldn't just be good. So I think both can be true. Yes, they're good, or yes, they'll have a 9 or 10 win season next year.
They just went 12-4. They went 11-5 a year ago. He's had one season in the NFL.
They did one season
since 2012. He has been in the league since 2012. He has had one season where he didn't win 10 games at least, and that was a 9-7 year. That was it. He wins 10 games every year. Why do people still do this?
Can you tell me something? Do you think it's good enough for Aaron Rodgers to have only one Super Bowl?
The playoffs is just
that's not a sigh and then talk. That's a yes or no question. Once again, it's not do you think one Super Bowl is enough for Aaron Rodgers?
No, I would say no.
Do you think it's enough for Russell Wilson?
No, but it's so hard, man. It's so one team wins every year. There are 32 teams. One team wins. Like,
and also, my final point, how many games they won last year is not impressive to me when the 49ers' entire team got injured. Like, not impressive. They don't even win the NFC West last year. Not impressive.
No,
anyways,
I'm just locking in the Seahawks. They're winning the division until they're not. Like, I'm locking in the Seahawks. Like, until Russell Wilson is not under center, like, I'm not betting against Russell Wilson in his division. I don't know
why you hate me so much. I just don't know what I did to you.
Ross, what do you think of all of this? Before Evan hangs up.
I think this is fantastic. I'm having a blast. No, I mean, look, I think that Russell Wilson is a starting quarterback in the NFL. Therefore, he is going to quarterback speak, just like we talk about coaches and their coach speak. This isn't really out of the ordinary for me. So I don't think of it as being much more than it actually is, which is just, it's literally just Russell Wilson doing what he feels like he has to do in order to continue to pacify the situation and make it look like it never happened. Because effectively, he's not going anywhere until after this season. And after the season, there's a legitimate conversation about him being traded. So he kind of needs to make the best out of wherever it is that he is. So if part of that is going to be that me and the, you know, this head coach that is still playing football like it's the 1980s, then that's what he's going to have to do. And that's totally fine. And so for me, it's just essentially what I would expect, essentially, when it comes down to the situation around Russell Wilson, not anything to me that is like too much fake, you know, too fake or not doing the right thing or anything like that. It's just par for the course in terms of a quarterback in his situation.
By the way, can you just say the part where you said there's a good chance that Russell Wilson might not be on the Seahawks next year again? Because like that just does so much.
Are you ready?
For me. One more time.
Yeah, you're right. Here we go. Yeah. He might not get traded this offseason, but it really does seem like next year there's a legitimate conversation. He could be traded next offseason.
Oh, thank God.
I feel good. I feel good.
I'm just so tired of being hurt by that little man.
I think Ross is just saying all of this because he is angling for the Saints to get involved after this year on Russell.
And by the way, how perfect would it be for them to go from one tiny mobile assassin murderer of a quarterback to another?
I would be very, very happy.
I'm out on all of this. I don't know. Against it. Fundamentally against it. Don't want it.
I just want to say it out loud for Chase to make sure he can hear it.
I'm good on Drew Brees to Russell Wilson in New Orleans. I'm good on that experiment. I don't want that. No, thank you.
That's all right. Then we'll talk about from Drew Brees to Aaron Rodgers then, and we can have that.
I mean, to be honest with you, though, like, listen, the Falcons are literally a season away from a full rebuild. So, like, if ever there was a time, you know what I'm saying? Like if Russell Wilson is going to the Saints, it might as well be at a time when you're not going to be able to compete anyways.
Well, that's not the plan. Terry Fontenot's plan is not that at all. Like he said, quote, rebuild is not in our vocabulary. Like, that is
right.
not what they're doing
right.
at all.
Kind of like right. kind of like that time that Russell Wilson said that he and Pete Carroll have never been better.
Okay.
Wow, what a callback. What a callback. What a callback. That was impressive. That was really perfect. Hey, Stephanie, are you alive? Or did that dog attack you and murder you?
I am taking this all in right now. There's so many comments I can make. I have not. I at this point have nothing to say on this comment on this entire topic. Holy crap!
So we all agree the Falcons are fine. So
not fine. They don't have a defense. What?
No, we're fine. AJ Terrell, the next Jalen Ramsey, you got the best two linebacker situation.
So when people get hurt, what happens?
Deion Jones, you got the Jared though? Inside, you got the Jackson brothers bouncing
death,
back.
I love how last year, it was AJ Terrell.
Hey, Daron Harmon, Eric Harris, bounce back years. Let's go.
Can you give me a favor?
New Orleans Saint, Eric Harris.
New Orleans Saint legend. Were any of those names real, Chase? Were you just making up names? I couldn't really, I can't be sure.
No, they're all real and they're fantastic. Football Outsiders, year in social media. Stephanie, which of these quotes, of these moments in the NFL the last year stood out to you the most? Which did you think was the best?
Which quotes were you talking about?
The Football Outsiders. So they do This Week in Quotes, and they compiled all their best ones for the last year. And there were some that I'd forgotten about. I remember seeing it in the moment, but there was so many different things, and you see it and you're just like, huh, okay. It was just amazing to see all this different stuff. But Joe Judge was summing up the Giants season on there, and he drew a Giants fan. There was it just incredible, a sad face. I love that, because watching Daniel Jones and trying to bet on a healthy Saquon Barkley is so sad, and their receiver room is so sad, generally speaking, and their situation with Andrew Thomas is so sad, and the New York Giants in general are so sad. That's the kind of stuff that you could pinpoint in this topic, Stephanie.
We're really gonna do the Giants thing. Now we're really gonna do this here. Now you want to talk about the Giants, but I don't want to talk about the Giants. You're not gonna talk about the Giants.
Well, I mean, I think what we could definitely do is talk about. Well, so here's the thing. Joe Judge drawing a little Giants fan while using the teleprompter.
I don't even know what you guys are talking about, to be honest.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing.
Last year, he did the Joe Judge report. So I think it's the Giants broadcast, all the teams.
Oh, yeah.
And he accidentally drew a sad face while showing tape of a Giants Cowboys game. So
it was sad. Mm-hmm. The team was sad. There was nothing good. The fact that the Giants won 6 games last season is actually very impressive.
Oh, God.
They did not deserve to win 6 games by any means. So the fact that they got there is phenomenal. I thought we'd win 4 games last season. So I would also do a frown face if I were trying to look at a roster with Kim Fleming on the team.
I also think the history awaits. I'd forgotten that one, that when Brady, Tom Brady also being elite at social media,
oh, that was
stinks.
Such a good one.
It stinks that he's as good as he is at social media. The quote the history awaits of him and Drew Brees just being old. Ross, was there one that stood out for you?
Well, that one was definitely one of them. I thought that was absolutely hysterical. I also, being somebody that has a theater background, and being somebody that has spent time learning the Hamilton tour, really loved the Christian Wilkins one, to where he was on the sideline during practice singing songs from Hamilton the musical, and asking people, "Did you see it on Disney Plus?" Which is a hysterical thing to see from a massively grown human. Really enjoyed that. And in a similar vein, I'm not a huge fan of Kirk Cousins as a football player and as a quarterback, but hey, in an acapella group, maybe he's got something there, because that was really outstanding.
Evan, what about you?
So, okay. So, I mean, this is a little bit of a tangent, not a tangent, but the Brady thing, right? We talk about his social media prowess. Can we please, I'm begging you, please the guy that has like 600 fucking what is the plastic surgery, whatever. Like the guy that has done all that work to his face. Like this is not the guy that's on Twitter making funny jokes. Like he pays someone for that. And like yes, it's hilarious, but none of it's Tom Brady. Tom Brady is an incredible, incredible quarterback. He's obviously the most impressive football player ever, but like that guy's not good at social media. And while we're here, I would like to just say what I think is a bit of a conspiracy theory. I don't think he actually tore his MCL. I mean, whoa, he might. No, hold on. Wait, let me know. I think he probably tore it.
He absolutely did.
No. Let me catch. No, he tore his MCL, but I don't think he did it at the time that he's saying it. I think he wants in his social media team, which is the best in the NFL, wants you to think that, oh, he played 43-year-old Tom Brady didn't tear his MCL and play throughout all those games. Didn't happen.
Oh, wow. I did not.
It could have happened at the end of the Super Bowl, maybe like in the second, third quarter, fourth quarter, something like that. But there's no way 43-year-old Tom Brady, no matter how many stem cells he has, was doing. That's not like no one questions that. No one questions that. Everyone just goes, "Oh yeah, Tom Brady, of course, sure, why not?"
Yeah, it's the same reason why him and Patrick Mahomes are like left out of every injury report, like fucking ever. But like they didn't have surgery, right? But we're going to leave them out on every site ever. They obviously had significant injuries. I don't know why they keep being left out of stuff.
Yeah, it's not even an existent. I don't know. I'm not saying he didn't tear his MCL. I just like to let that be known. But the idea like that they put out there that he did it so like, oh, he played so much on this torn MCL. Nah, fuck that. Tom Brady's a liar.
Oh my God. There we go. I did not know we were getting conspiratorial, Evan, tonight.
What a great word, by the way.
Xavier Howard is apparently on the trade block in Miami. Stephon Gilmore, obviously still negotiating with New England. That's been rocky. But in terms of Howard suitors, Ross, who do you think makes a lot of sense? Do you think a lot of the teams that were maybe going to be in on Richard Sherman with everything that's happening there, are they going to turn to Howard? Are teams going to wait on what happens with Gilmore because he is the better player? What kind of package makes sense to you for Howard, and who do you think makes the most sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're spot on in terms of the teams that would be interested. Any of those teams that were sort of, you know, visiting with Richard Sherman, who, by the way, we hope is okay and is getting the help that he needs. But with the situation around Xavier Howard and the situation around his contract, which is a very nuanced conversation that just brings to the forefront that APY and total money don't matter when it comes to contracts. That guaranteed money does. He's out of guaranteed money after the season, next 3 years entirely unguaranteed. So he's looking for a new contract. So you have to look for a team that's going to be willing to also spend money while also making this trade. So the Indianapolis Colts, who were in on Richard Sherman and have been connected to Richard Sherman, they make a lot of sense. I wouldn't be surprised to see even the Tennessee Titans have a little bit of interest. They don't have a lot of money though, but they have a little bit now with the Ryan Tannehill restructure. So if they build the contract correctly and back load it a little bit, then they would be able to do it. They ended up losing, the Minnesota Vikings, who ended up, we're not sure what's going to happen with Jeff Gladney and all in his future with that team. They signed Breshad Breeland and they have Patrick Peterson, but if you want more of a sure thing and make Breshad Breeland your third option, that absolutely makes sense. The New Orleans Saints should be an option. They are in big time need of a cornerback to opposite Marshawn Lattimore. And the offer that makes a lot of sense from any of these teams, I know that Miami says that they want a first round pick, but teams with players that are trying to force their way out, should it come to that, rarely get what they're asking for because they don't really have much leverage in the situation thanks to the player's request. So I would say that probably a second round pick, maybe even a group of selections, and maybe some type of a sweetener on top of that, maybe a, you know, another corner or a younger veteran that would come through. I wouldn't be surprised to see more suitors in favor of pursuing Xavien Howard if he becomes available over Stephon Gilmore, just based on the age at 28 years old and being able to potentially find somebody to not only plug in for this year, but also plug in for future years if that's the route that a team wants to go.
Yeah, I mean, what I just don't understand, Xavien Howard's one of the most exciting cornerbacks that we've seen in the last, you know, little while, right? Like, we've had a really good run of, like, number one, number two corners going back all the way to Richard Sherman, Patrick Peterson, and all that. Why are they already trying? I mean, like, they're building a decent roster. They've got, you know, all of these picks that they've been able to use. They're keeping Tuia, like, obviously, if you're going to have Tuia learning, who kind of struggled last year, you want your defense to play well. Like, I just don't understand. You get this cornerback. He's very exciting. One of the most technically sound, like, you know, Chad Johnson was just talking about how smart he is, how he's always in the perfect position, never out of position. Why are you even entertaining that? Like, enjoy yourself having
just renegotiated corner. Yeah. Like, literally just renegotiate his deal, give him more guaranteed money, restructure, whatever it takes to keep him in Miami. It doesn't make any sense at all.
It just seems like such a Dolphins move. It's like you finally get something good. What was that? Come again?
It's moronic. It's just moronic, yeah. Is all it is.
Yeah, I mean, the teams that I think need him the most, I just don't think are going to dip their toes into it. Like, the Seahawks may have the best cornerback situation in the NFL. But I don't see, after they made the Jamal Adams splash, like, I don't think they're going to do another just gigantic trade, giving up multiple assets for Howard. And then you look around the league, the Saints, as you said, Ross, make a lot of sense. But I also just think the Cowboys make a lot of sense, too. The Cowboys, I think, make it like seem like the team that would give up some high capital there. And then maybe the dark horse for me a little bit is the Bears, where I think the Bears is just so much is riding on the season. We know Khalil Mack is arguably the still best edge rusher in football. They lost some secondary help this offseason, but I think if they were to go after somebody like Howard, that would be a dark horse sleeper to me that I think would be interesting, because there's just so much riding on what they do. And we know, I mean, you know, as a Ryan Pace guy back in New Orleans, that he's aggressive. Ugh. And if
he is very aggressive.
Exactly. And they have nothing to lose. Ryan Pace has nothing to lose this year. So Howard being on the block would not surprise me if he's making a call to Miami. Yeah. Are you guys ready to get into our NFC South preview?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to start with the Saints, Ross. So the Saints, they are ushering in a new era of Jameis Winston doing weird things to prepare for the season on social media. Today he was throwing around a towel, I seem to recall.
Much like Patrick Mahomes was.
Yes, yes. As Stephanie pointed out, I believe, on Twitter as well, that they both do weird stuff. And it's just, he just does weird. I think it just looks weird with Jameis. Jameis, I think it's his face. I think everything involved, like, there's just something about it that
he does, like, his eyes.
Yes,
like, he gets really focused.
There's something. I was just gonna say, like, it's literally the stepbrothers, right? There's something about your face. I don't know what it is. I'm gonna punch you right in your suckhole.
The first thing I want to ask you, Ross, the drop off from what you saw from Drew Brees last year to Winston, a full season of Winston with some Taysom Hill scattered in there, I'm sure. If we are an outsider, would it be wise for us to bet the drop off from Brees to Winston will still be huge? Or do you think there is room for optimism that Peyton and Carmichael are going to get a lot more out of Winston, especially downfield, than we're expecting this year?
So even with the downfield conversation, I pumped the brakes a little bit, because this is still a Pete Carmichael, Sean Payton offense. And so I think that there's going to be a lot more, and I think it might take people by surprise, whether it is Jameis Winston or Taysom Hill that wins that starting quarterback role, that there's still going to be a lot of conservatism in this offense. This offense will continue to lean in on its run game, which has been one of the best over the last couple of seasons, or has continued to get better over the last couple of seasons, we did it that way. And they've always used the short passing game as an extension of the run game. But then I think you'll see them take more shots downfield. You certainly saw them try to do that with Taysom Hill a few times. Either they would bring him in to throw some deep passes that ended up having way too much air under them, or during the four games that he played. And, you know, he had that one that absolutely looked like a punt to Emmanuel Sanders in the Falcons game. I think it was the second Falcons game. I think that with all of that, you'll still see those downfield shots. And I do think you're going to notice there's going to be a big time noticeable difference when it comes to the drop off from Drew Brees to Jameis Winston and or Taysom Hill, because of the fact that when it comes to Drew Brees, you had somebody that had full command of the defense, full command of the offense, somebody that knew exactly where every player was going to be, when they were going to be there. The routine was the same. Everything was the same. And all of that is going to be very different this year. The spot throws, the, you know, perfectly placed passes, ball placement, anticipation, putting a ball where only a receiver could catch it, all of that stuff. All of that has to be now relearned and reworked with a new quarterback learning a brand new system. So, yeah, I do think there's going to be a big time drop off in terms of the style of play, but I don't know that the style of play itself and the approach of the offense changes too much away from what is a usual Sean Payton offense.
So what I'm really curious about, and because I know that like Michael Thomas has gotten so much shit lately. I don't know if it's deserved or not. I think he's a pretty impressive receiver, especially was in his rookie year. Do you think the dynamic between him and the quarterback being so different now with someone that can throw more than 7 yards, like, are we going to see a refresh and revitalize Michael Thomas, or do you think we'll keep using him in that like short passing game that he's so like dynamic at?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think, you know, you're not going to take him away from where he performs best, which is still pretty close to the line of scrimmage, inside breaking routes, outside breaking routes as well. Something that puts them around the, that puts him up against the line of scrimmage. I think you'll, the boundary. I think you'll still see all of that. But, you know, you reference his rookie year with the New Orleans Saints, and there was a lot more downfield movement in that season with Drew Brees, who was still able to get the ball downfield quite a bit. So I think you'll see all of that come back. I don't think you're going to see 149 catches again, but I do think that you can still see over 100 catches from this receiver, and you'll finally see him maybe get into the double-digit touchdown count, because he still hasn't done that in his career yet. And, you know, still see the yardage come up a little bit in terms of yards per attempt, air yards per attempt. All of those things should improve regardless of who's at the quarterback there. I mean, Jameis Winston before the 2019 season targeted outside receivers 43.1% of the time, which was second most since the 2009 season, even though he'd only been in the NFL for 5 years at that point, or 4 years at that point, actually. And then Taysom Hill, over the four games that he played with Michael Thomas, 37 targets over the course of those four games, including a game where Taysom Hill passed for like 78 yards because they were going up against an opposing Denver Broncos team that was using a practice squad wide receiver as an emergency quarterback, which is a game that just should have never happened in the first place. And so I think that you'll still see the, you know, wealth of targets, plus who else are they going to throw to outside of Alvin Kamara, honestly, on that offense. So I think you'll still see him get those targets, and you'll still see them rely on him in the short and intermediate area, but I do think you'll see them push downfield a little bit more with him as well.
It's awesome.
I wonder too, because they're in this weird spot. We talk about the Falcons, but they're not in as weird of a spot to me as the Saints. I do think they're, like, if you were looking at, I don't know if the betting odds in front of me, but I do think there is a narrative that is easily formable in New Orleans for Sean Payton coach of the year. Like, with Drew Brees retiring, if Brady slips a little bit and the repeat year goes a little bit unsmoothly in Tampa, like, if they win that division, the path to coach of the year for Sean Payton, if he wins it with Jameis and Taysom Hill, is easy, right? Like, I think it is interesting for Sean Payton. This is a big year for him. We saw it. It kind of reminds me of, obviously, New England last year with Belichick, and it didn't go that way. But I also think, like, part of that was just Cam's health and just the, like, they were in a different situation. I think there's a lot more talent around New Orleans, and I think they're built better. The offensive line is still strong. You just locked up Ramczyk. You have a lot of pieces still on defense, and this is still one of the better defenses in football under Dennis Allen. But, like, I do think there is an interesting path to Sean Payton having one of those, like, revitalized years that people were expecting from Belichick, where, like, he gets to recreate something. Like, this is the kind of stuff that rejuvenates a lot of these coaches who kind of get bored or get burnt out from the same old, and now he's like, I'm tasked with making this former number one overall pick a great starter again. Like, that is something that I imagine Sean Payton is getting up for, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it's something that, I mean, I'm not going to say that he's looking forward to, because, you know, obviously he's going to want Drew Brees, and, you know, like, that's, you're not going to really look forward to like a big change like this. And, you know, if given the opportunity, I'm sure he would coach Drew Brees for another four seasons if they know that they could do it and be competitors. But for Sean Payton, this is, you know, an opportunity for him to take the small sample size that we've gotten from being 8-1 over the last 2 years without his Hall of Fame quarterback in Drew Brees, 5-0 with Teddy Bridgewater, 3-1 with Taysom Hill, and be able to really take that and extrapolate it over the course of an entire season to where he has an off season to game plan. He has, you know, he's not dealing with an emergency quarterback situation, and he can build an offense around either one of those quarterbacks. And in either case, whether he's revitalizing Jameis Winston or he's turning Taysom Hill, who everybody thinks, as including myself, by the way, like, I still look at Jameis Winston as being the most likely, you know, quarterback out of the two, because I still think that Taysom Hill is mostly a Swiss Army knife offensive weapon, and that's where he's best. And, you know, and some people look at him as just a special team or a quote unquote gadget player. If he can turn that narrative into a starting quarterback of a playoff team, then that really does speak highly for Sean Payton. And if you look at the records of teams that are trying to follow up the replacement of a or the follow-up season for a Hall of Fame quarterback returning, the only instance of a team getting better after a quarterback ends up retiring the year after in terms of more wins was when Dan Marino retired from the Miami Dolphins. And that's really it. Even when Aaron Rodgers came in and took over for the Green Bay Packers, it was, you know, a 6-10 season, if I remember correctly, that year. And so I think that, you know, you're going against history when it comes to teams that are losing Hall of Fame quarterbacks, and you're also going up against recent history when it comes to who these two quarterbacks are in terms of the options that you have to move forward with at least the 2021 season.
Interesting. Last thing, we'll wrap up on the Saints. The defense, for people who are confused as to how the New Orleans Saints have become so defense oriented and like keeping things afloat when Drew Brees starts to slip, Ross, how would you explain Dennis Allen's success in recent years, just turning this defense around?
Yeah, I mean, I think a big part of it is their success in the draft, and you can look over to the offensive side for that too, of course. But I mean, you know, outside of DeMario Davis, this entire defense was drafted by this team or was, you know, part of the undrafted free agent class. And so I think that it's a big part of them getting the players that fit Dennis Allen's system and getting the players that fit in inside of the facility in terms of the guys that fit into the locker room. So I think that there's that portion of it. And then there's also the good blend of youth and veteran leadership at all three levels. You had that last season, and you have that coming into this season as well. Malcolm Jenkins coming back and rejoining the team last year in the secondary. He'll be back this year. DeMario Davis, who really helped to turn this defense around. They went from 17th ranked defense to 14th to 11th to 4th during the time that over the 3 years that DeMario Davis has been a New Orleans Saint thus far. And he's been a huge part of that, as has Malcolm Jenkins in that 2020 season. And then on the defensive line, Cam Jordan, who is a homegrown guy as part of that 2011 draft class. And so you have all of these players at each of the three levels that can be veteran leaders amongst all of these young and very talented players, like that 2017 draft class that brought in Marshawn Lattimore, and then brought in, of course, Marcus Williams, who unfortunately they couldn't get a long-term deal done with before the franchise tag deadline. And now they're going to rely on more youth, and Peyton Turner and Pete Werner and Paulson Adebo potentially at the cornerback spot. So it's been a good blend of making sure that they're getting their guys, the guys that fit the mold for what Dennis Allen likes to do, which is play a lot of man defense. They played 47% man defense last year, first in the NFL there. They play a lot of zone match too, to where they're blending zone and man concepts based upon routes that are being run. So they've really leaned in highly on football IQ, really leaned highly on confidence, and have really leaned in highly on guys that they know are going to fit that system that Dennis Allen wants to create, who has really, really created something kind of special when it comes to this New Orleans Saints defense, which has helped to carry an injured quarterback and an end of career quarterback over the last couple of seasons.
Interesting. Stephanie, as we wrap up the Saints, your fantasy person, or it could be the New Orleans Saints defense as a whole. What intrigued you about the Saints fantasy wise this season?
Nothing. No, they quite literally. The Saints are fine. I don't trust Sean Payton and his obsession with quarterbacks. And I don't know what's going to go on over there. So I'm not, you know, a Kamara I would never be taking as Lee as I have taken him during this offseason. But I don't know what's going on over there.
Who's going first for the Saints usually? Who's the first Saint off the board in fantasy drafts right now?
Yeah, he is. But I would rather take someone else over him because I need more out of the Saints. I need more structure out of that system there.
Well, I mean, isn't it safe to say that Jameis Winston just makes every single offensive player for fantasy football just not a safe play this year? Like, I'm not saying that, like,
does Taysom?
It's not going to be Taysom Hill. I don't care what anybody says.
I know, but do either of them make anyone comfortable?
That's what I'm saying. Like, how do you pick a Saints player? I mean, like, Michael Thomas, maybe just because he's obviously such a safety net. But, like, I don't know that I can – like, I'm not taking them because I want to. I'm taking them because I'm settling.
Mm-hmm. I think NASCAR legend Alvin Kamara is pretty safe.
But I would rather take – like, I'm going to take Jonathan Taylor before I'm taking Kamara.
Interesting.
Oh, but that's easy, though. Absolutely.
But are we sure the Colts are going to be good?
Yes.
Like, are we sure that he's going to be able to...
I would heavily advise against that.
Wait, taking Jonathan Taylor in that offensive line over Alvin Kamara.
The Saints have a great offensive line.
The entire league, though. Like, what?
Yeah. I don't know. I tend to lean into players out of the backfield more, like Christian McCaffrey, Nick Chubb, the Alvin Kamara, the guys that can also be a part of the passing game. And that's sort of the reason why I think of. I'm sorry.
They didn't even touch the top three rushing yards last season. Taylor had that.
That's why I'm saying. Yeah, that's why I'm saying, like, I guess I play in a lot of, like, PPR leagues, and so I would go with the guy that's going to catch a lot of passes.
People don't play PPR.
No, I mean, obviously people pay, you know, I get that. But, like, my point is this. If it was Drew Brees, sure. But with the quarterback situation in New England, like, that passing game isn't guaranteed. And you're not taking Kamara with, like, a third-round pick if you do take him. You have to take him high just because that's the running back position in fantasy. Jonathan Taylor's a workhorse. He's going to get his money. But
I
like,
think he's going to be a workhorse in Indy. They have a lot of backs. Indy is actually quietly deep. And then in New Orleans, I mean, it's Latavius Murray and then Ty Montgomery might get some snaps. Dwayne Washington, like, it's not like we know that Peyton's going to run and throw to Kamara a bunch. Like, they're going to target Kamara a bunch. I'm not that the Colts are not going to use a rotation as much as they will. And well, also, I believe the Saints are going to be up more. Like, the way I look at running backs, too, is that, like, running back's biggest values is when your team is good and you need him to sit on leads. Like, that is, like, if the team's not going to be good, then you shouldn't take their running back because...
Do you think the Colts aren't going to be good?
What happens when the Colts are bad, though? You know what ends up happening? When Wentz can't throw the ball? Guess who gets it? Who gets the ball?
I mean, they're going to Ty Hilton. They're going to Michael Pittman Jr., Paris Campbell.
Yeah, because Carson Wentz doesn't throw close to or behind the line of scrimmage. That's my concern, and that's why I don't trust Carson Wentz, and why I ended up staying away from Jonathan Taylor. Because the only way that Jonathan Taylor gets production is as a runner. Now, Stephanie obviously is way smarter than I am when it comes to fantasy football.
No, I'm not.
Doubt about that. No, and so I just look at, like, Alvin Kamara's usage. Like, Alvin Kamara is going to be the Saints offense for the most part in 2021. You know what I mean? Because and I think that, like, if you avoided Mike Evans and you avoided Chris Godwin with Jameis Winston at quarterback, then yes, you should avoid Michael Thomas with Jameis as at the quarterback position. But if you invested in Chris Godwin and invested in Mike Evans because, you know, Jameis Winston's interceptions don't count against those wide receivers, but the receiving yards and the touchdowns do, and the receptions do, then I think you do lean in a little bit more towards Michael Thomas. But I think Michael Thomas dropped out of the top 50 this year in terms of ADP. Or out of the top 30.
He had a pretty Michael Thomas. Once again, I've always been a pretty big fan of Michael Thomas. So I won't say whether or not it's fair or not, but he got his ass kicked from a, like a, you know, a reputational standpoint this last year. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know if anyone took a bigger hit with like how people discussed him. Like before they were like, oh, he's a great wide receiver, one of the best. And last year they're like, I mean, he was getting just flamed entirely because, oh, you can only catch the ball. You know, he's averaging 1.7 yards per whatever. And he took a big hit.
He's getting taken. I think he's wide receiver. What the hell is it? Like, I think he's still getting taken within the top 30, though. He's not like going, he's not falling so far out.
Right.
Yeah. He might be good.
Is his ADP in terms of like overall player outside of the top 30? Because I know he took a big somewhere.
Receiver, yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
But also this last year was a really, you know, a renaissance for young receivers. So he's just getting his, you know, it's just a matter of that.
And you also have him coming off of a high ankle sprain and a deltoid injury. Like those are things that particularly the high ankle sprain, like that can linger way longer in terms of your ability to be explosive, make cuts. Like that's a big concern for him coming back in 2021 too. I mean, it is the injury conversation around him and whether or not he's actually going to have the longevity to get you a full fantasy season. And I think that's valid.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of things at the end of the day, when you look at like a traditional workhorse running back, there's like Jonathan Taylor is that, but he does have Nyheim Hines. Right. And also Marlon Mack too. Mm-hmm. But I think like, Alvin Kamara has to make his money catching the ball out of the backfield. And
yeah,
it's a good, I mean, if Sean Payton can do a Sean Payton thing and revitalize Jameis Winston, Kamara should have a great season.
Yeah. And here's what the one last thing that I'll mention. I know Chase probably wants to move on from the Saints as quickly as possible. but
no, because eventually he'll have to talk about the Falcons. So
hold on, the Falcons are quick. 11-6. It's no question. Book it.
But when it comes down to Alvin Kamara's usage, particularly in a passing game, whichever quarterback wins that starting quarterback position, wins that starting quarterback competition, whether it be Taysom Hill or Jameis Winston, 1,000%. The largest part of the evaluation process is going to be that quarterback's ability to be able to continue to utilize Alvin Kamara in the passing game. 81 receptions over the course of his first three seasons, 83 over the course of 2020, the first NFL player in NFL history with 500 receiving and rushing yards over the course of his first four seasons. That will continue, and he'll continue to push that number and continue to push all of that. But like whoever it is that wins the quarterback position is not going to be the one that is of detriment to Sean Payton's most reliable weapon.
Totally.
It all doesn't matter because Ian Book is going to start anyway.
Okay.
Ian Book 2022, baby.
Someone who's watched a lot of Ian Book college tape, nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. Notre Dame is a real playoff like championship contender if they have a different quarterback under center. The Falcons. A team that I'm quite familiar with. They're going through a weird season. Sure? Julio was traded. I put it on my list. I was like, I think people are overstating how critical the loss of Julio Jones will be. And this is someone who looks at Julio as the, like, I ran the tracks of Knoxville today in an Air Julio Falcon shirt. Like that's what I was rocking. That leave the memories alone. However, this offense, we've seen it still hum without Julio. And Calvin Ridley is ready to be a wide receiver one. I think Kyle Pitts is going to be an immediate Swiss Army knife and immediately productive. I think they've invested a bunch in the offensive line. I think Mike Davis is going to get a bunch of carries. I like Javion Hawkins a lot, and I think he'll do stuff out of Louisville. And I think Dean Pease just, he knows defense. Like Dean Pease is going to get more out of this group than I think a lot of people expect. And AJ Terrell flashed a lot, and learning to become a good corner in today's NFL is just hard. It takes time. It's kind of like being a point guard in basketball, where like Jeff Okuda was atrocious. Like he was the number three pick. He was the safest guy, and he was getting torched week after week. Like he got destroyed last year in Detroit. Like it's just hard for these corners. But I do think they invested. And I think Richie Grant might turn some heads early. Like that dude's going to be good out of UCF. And then you have Deion Jones and Foye Olukon who are great. And you have Grady Jarrett who's still inside. And like if Dante Fowler bounces back, like I think the pass rush situation is pretty dire, but like they're the fact that PFF has them is like a safe team to not be terrible, but also not be elite, I think is fair, because I think it would just be really hard for the bottom to fall out like it did last year to go 4-12, because it's just not a 4-12 team. Like it, even with or without Julio, they're not that. And I think Julio misses a lot of games anyway. He misses a lot of snaps. This Falcons offense has dealt with a lot of Julio injuries in recent years. Like they are prepared for life after Julio, better than a lot of teams would be losing their all-time best receiver. But I do think there's still a limit as to what they can be in 2021. But I do think they're going to be, I think they'll be better than a 4-12 team. And I think they'll be closer to a 7-10, 8-9 type thing.
So I was going to, so I will say though, I need to comment on this. I think that the Falcons, I agree, Julio leaving does not change anything about this team, to be completely honest. Like,
I wouldn't go that far. It changes some stuff. It changes some stuff.
Because you have Pitts now though. So this is a different picture. So Ridley is able to be the wide receiver one, and Russell Gage is one of the most overlooked players, like literally. Every time, anytime that Julio is not in the field, that's when Russell Gage does well. So you have Russell Gage be able to be the wide receiver two. You have Kyle Pitts come in. The target's going to be spread fine, and you're going to have the offense that you've had. So I don't know that this team, they're definitely going to do better than they did last year. It comes down to the defense. That's what their success is going to come down to. Their offense, I'm not worried about. There's so much depth on that offensive chart.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have Hayden Hurst and Kyle Pitts out there, and Hurst, it's probably done after this year based on his contract stuff, but like, I think it's just going to be, they're going to have a lot of options. They're going to throw some dudes out, and I think, I mean, who could write off Tajae Sharpe reuniting with our
Tajae Sharpe?
Wow.
Oh,
hey, listen, I'm not going to lie. I wanted Tajae Sharpe so bad on the New Orleans Saints that he was a free agent last, like the offseason before last. Such a good slot season that he had. I hope he can resurrect and have another good year. I just hope it's not in Atlanta.
Mm. Well, I'm concerned about the left guard spot. That really concerns me. Like Willie Wright right now is penciled in, and like Matt Hennessy at center with the departed Alex Mack. Like you drafted Drew Dahlman, you drafted Jalen.
Thanks for that, by the way.
Oh yeah, okay. Irrelevant. Appreciate that. I'm concerned about that, but Jake Matthews is as solid as it gets. And I also just, I'm so curious to see how much they're able to get out of Mike Davis. Like I watched Mike Davis carve up this Falcons defense on Thursday Night Football last year. Mm-hmm. He was good. Like Mike Davis is just someone that like you don't invest in. I don't know if you've seen his thighs, but the man has the biggest thighs in the NFL. Like that dude is an absolute just muscle. Like he is a muscle. Like
49ers legend.
Yes. 49ers legend, Mike Davis. That dude, this sub, like every picture you're like those aren't real. Like every picture of Mike Davis looks Photoshopped. So I don't know how teams are going to tackle, but based on the track record of Arthur Smith coaching physical freaks at running back, I think we can only expect Derrick Henry Ajayce down there in Atlanta. That's all I can come to.
I just gotta say it is bold fucking move of you to try and compare Mike Davis, who's on his fourth NFL team in like the last 6 years, as the greatest running back in the NFL currently.
Well, hold on. Did they not both go to SEC schools? People forget Mike Davis, South Carolina.
Chase, you went to an SEC school. Do you want to get in there?
Well, hold on. The fact that, I am not built like a running back. Now, I'm maybe closer.
Neither is Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry is built like Derrick Henry is bigger than his tight end.
Yeah, Derrick Henry's not built like a running back either. No, but my point. Okay, so what I will say is this: we have talked about the Atlanta Falcons naturally as they are your favorite football teams a lot, and I think most of the time we kind of have said things in a negative light as they're on the tail end of, really not being able to compete as the way they used to. Obviously, losing Julio is going to be weird. I don't know if it really makes a difference. You think it does. I don't really know that I do. I have to go with Steph on that. The team wasn't really doing a whole lot last year at the hands of Julio in terms of, like, difference making in the game. You know, he had some great plays. He's Julio Jones. But, like, I don't know that he was really, like, winning or losing games. I think maybe Kyle Pitts, if he lives up to the hype, which holy shit, that's some of the most hyped pre-draft tight end maybe ever. I don't know, probably. Mm-hmm. So I just think the Falcons are going to really skate by this year with a very average season. I don't think they're going to have a 4-win season. They're certainly not winning 10 games. There's no chance in hell. And that's fine. That's what happens when you're reloading, matrix reloading. I don't know what East Fodnot said, but yeah, it's fine. They'll be fine. It's fine.
He's getting the cap right this year.
I will say, yeah, yeah, that's like, that should be the big focus. And so far they've done a good job with that, right? Like if they could also do something with Grady Jarrett's salary, I think that would help them even further, whether it's a restructure, which Terry Fontenot has learned a lot about restructuring coming from New Orleans Saints. Or if they do anything, you know, whatever it might be in order to do that, or if they just carry that and then rid themselves of it next year, that's another good option for them. But I will say that, like, as somebody that covers the team that has to game plan for the Atlanta Falcons twice a year, last year, the New Orleans Saints they game planned a bit more for Calvin Ridley than they game planned for Julio Jones. I mean, and that was in a game where they didn't have Marshon Lattimore available. And so I think that I agree that I think the way Stephanie said it, I agree with a little bit more in that, like, it's a bit of a lateral move for them because they draft Kyle Pitts and then they go ahead and they trade away Julio Jones. The biggest question is going to be, is Kyle Pitts somehow going to be different than just about every other tight end in the history of the National Football League? And is his impact going to be immediate in his rookie season? Mm-hmm. And I think in order for his impact to be immediate, then they have to keep him away from places where he's learning new blocking schemes and learning, you know, everything that comes with one of the hardest positions to transition to in the NFL from the collegiate level, being a tight end position outside of maybe interior offensive line. And so I think that if they utilize him more as a split end than they utilize him as a formal, like, why in line, why kind of guy, then I think that there's a good chance and they end up having essentially a lateral move on the offensive side. And maybe lateral isn't the right word here, but I think you understand what I'm trying to say. That it's not a huge detriment to them. It's not like they're all of a sudden never going to be able to produce on offense again because they don't have Julio Jones. And then just the better that Kyle Pitts gets over time, then the better that team gets and the more equipped they are for more Matt Ryan or post Matt Ryan, which I think it's something that you're going to see with Terry Fontenot, who spent time with end of career Drew Brees in the pro personnel department, bringing in free agents and building a team around an aging quarterback that could operate in place of that aging quarterback, but also be operated by that aging quarterback. Something he did extremely well in New Orleans from the pro personnel side. And I think he has the experience to do it very well in Atlanta as well.
I think this is a good move. I'm telling you, at the end of the day, it's going to a great move, because then you bring in someone, you're going to bring in a younger quarterback whenever they decide that that's going to be the move that they want to make, and then you're able to build this team up. You know, you also bring on a guy like Frank Darby, right? There's so much depth to this depth chart. I'm okay with the Atlanta Falcons moving on. Julio, someone had to make money. Someone had to find money, and that's the way that they were going to do it, because there was no way they were even going to be able to afford the rookies. Like, they had to get rid of Julio. It had to happen.
Also, whenever we have these conversations, it's just like people just overlook. He asked for a trade. Like, Julio wanted out. Like, this is something that was also just, he was close with Dan Quinn. Like, he was ready to move on. Like, Julio did not want to be an Atlanta Falcon anymore. Like, that is something that's overlooked.
Yeah,
like,
it was, and that had been going on for a while.
Correct. Yeah, so like that part, it sucked, but that's an overlooked concept to this and what Terry Fontenot had to do. Stephanie, as we wrap up the Falcons, your favorite fantasy football nugget with Atlanta is what? Are you a Mike Davis believer early in the first round? Do you think he gets a lot of run with Arthur Smith's offense? Is it Russell Gage? Who is it for you?
I mean, it's probably Calvin Ridley. I think a lot of people really do look over Calvin Ridley and what he's been able to do fantasy-wise, like, entirely. I think last year, like, God, off of this, I'm gonna look up. I think he finished wide receiver 5, I want to say. Like, he finished very high. So Calvin Ridley is always good in fantasy. I love Russell Gage as, like, a late round snag there, but as long as you're not reaching too high for Kyle Pitts. This team is great. I mean, offensively, this is, you know, other than the Eagles and the Cowboys, I'm trying to think of other teams, but they just have a crappy defense, but offensively, fantastic. Great for fantasy. Matt Ryan is probably one of the most consistent quarterbacks that you're ever going to get in fantasy. Like, you straight up know what you're going to get with Matt Ryan, and I love that. So you can expect the same kind of thing that he's giving you year after year, because he has to be the most consistent dude ever. So I like all the guys here. I don't love the running backs. I don't know that I'm going to get involved in that scenario, but that's up for everyone else to deal with.
Interesting. The Panthers. Evan, the Carolina Panthers brought in Sam Darnold, a guy that your team was rumored to be exploring trading for this offseason, somebody that would make sense for Kyle Shanahan and what he was looking for. When you look at this Panthers team, year two for Matt Rhule, with Joe Brady running things and running that offense, locking up some offensive line pieces, Christian McCaffrey, maybe a 17-game season for him, but we'll have to see. What do you make of the Darnold move, and are the Panthers perhaps better equipped to bounce back and maybe not even bounce back, but just maybe break through more than we might expect going into the year?
Yeah, you know, so first and foremost, J.C. Horn is really one of the most exciting players in the draft last year. I'm very excited to watch him play. I think that he could immediately become one of the more exciting players in the NFL. Christian McCaffrey, he is Christian McCaffrey. He's going to do Christian McCaffrey things. I think DJ Moore is one of the most underrated receivers in the entire NFL. It's insane how good DJ Moore has been, and he never really gets talked about in that top tier. Other than that, you know, there's just a lot of things that you can like on that. Moten is a tackle, right? Like, I don't care about David Moore coming over from the Seahawks. I'm more curious to see. I mean, it really all falls on Darnold, right? Like, Darnold had the curse of Adam Gase, the same way that Ryan Tannehill did, and we saw what Ryan Tannehill was able to do with Arthur Smith. So, you know, I am curious to see what happens here with Sam Darnold. Can he have that same type of resurgence? He's definitely got the weapons to do so. But, you know, if for any reason whatsoever he's unable to do that, I mean, how soon until they start calling for Will Greer? So, you know, it depends on how things end up. You know, does anyone else think that these offensive weapons could be exciting?
I definitely do. I mean, I think that the idea, like what you mentioned with DJ Moore, this guy's been incredible for the past, like, I mean, his entire time in the NFL since he came in from Maryland, 1,000-yard seasons every year, despite all of the changes at quarterback and everything that he's done so far. I mean, he's been one of my favorite fantasy targets in redraft leagues all the time because I've been able to go back to him. And then you look at, you know, the reuniting of Sam Darnold and Robbie Anderson. So you get him in a new environment, but you still give him a familiar weapon. I think that's great. And you give him a, you know, a running back in Christian McCaffrey, who's looking to have a big bounce back season. I think that the weapons over on the offensive side are really, really intriguing. I completely agree with you that it's really just about the ability of Sam Darnold to be able to essentially resurrect his career. Is he going to be able to do it with a young kind of, you know, wonder kid like Joe Brady? Is he going to be able to do it with these weapons around him? And if he can't, can the weapons carry him? Which I think is a big part of what that sort of experiment has to be around him.
Yeah.
So I do think that the offensive weapons are going to be pretty good around him.
I'm on the other side of the ball. Like, you know, once again, as a 49ers fan, God, if I had a dollar for every time I said that on this podcast, I've always enjoyed NFL teams that have really exciting or really talented players at all the different positions in the defense. So, you know, we already talked about J.C. Horn, could potentially be one of the best cornerbacks immediately, but they also brought in A.J. Bouye, which who knows to what extent he has left, but. You know, Hassan Riddick was a really like kind of low key good signing. We all know Derek Brown's one of the better defensive tackles in the NFL. Jeremy Chinn last year maybe people forgot. Jeremy Chinn was one of the best linebackers in the NFL. So you start to look at this team and you see if they can get something out of AJ Bouye, if they can get Horn to be the cornerback that people are almost guaranteeing him to be, they could have a really sneaky good defense that has really talented players at all different phases of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, Burns is as consistent as it gets. I think Reddick has been quietly, like, he was a bust early on in Arizona, and he has become one of the better edge guys, and he'll be playing the Sam and in Carolina. But him, Shaq Thompson, Perryman, like, I like that. And then, they've invested a lot across the board. And I think Horn is going to be fascinating because it seemed like the reaction to that pick by people a lot smarter than me in the NFL was it might have been a reach. And I'm curious to see if this is something where the Panthers front office was just ahead of the curve on, and this was a bigger swing that they just saw and other teams did not. Also, just their offensive line is fascinating because they've invested a lot there. They drafted Brady Christensen in the third round. They have Greg Little from a couple years ago backing up Cam Irving, who's going to anchor that left side. You have Pat Elflein on the left side. You have Matt Paradis center. Like, it's interesting because I don't know. I think Taylor Monton is as consistent as it comes, and they just paid him at right tackle. I wonder what that means for Darnold, because we haven't seen Darnold be behind an offensive line like this before. So I'm curious to see what his stats are behind this offensive line and what his, like, I'm going to monitor week to week what his passer rating is from a clean pocket. Like, I'm so curious to see what happens there, because I think he's actually going to have an opportunity with this group to really, really do the kind of dink and dunk stuff that Joe Brady did with Joe Burrow to an elite level 2 years ago at LSU.
I mean, Steph, you tell me, because I know that you're one of the better people here to talk shit with me. If Sam Darnold has a good year this year, can Adam Gase ever leave his house ever again?
He already shouldn't leave his house. Right? Sam Darnold's going to be fine. Like, there's no reason. Every single year, there's a quarterback that we all get so excited about, and then they get into a shitty system, and then we decide they're horrible. I think that Sam Darnold is finally getting the chance to prove who he is and show it off his skills. I mean, this team, there's no reason for Sam Darnold not to succeed, and he should do above average. But the Jets are a very broken system, so this is like being resurrected, honestly. Like, there's no reason he can't do well. And I still believe in Darnold. I think Darnold will do well in this system. And if he doesn't, he's done. I mean, we have a ton of quarterbacks this entire year that all of them, I mean, if they don't perform, they're going to be a QB2s, and that's it.
Yeah. It is interesting. The luster, it's almost completely off Darnold. Like, there is so much pressure on him in Carolina, or teams are just going to see him as a backup from here on out. So I'm very fascinated to see.
It feels like there's less pressure, though, you know, like, because he actually has options here, like, whereas he was in such a shit storm before.
Yeah.
Real quick. So a coach who's been an offensive coordinator for the 49ers under Steve Mariucci. Obviously, you know, Greg Knapp was a passing game coordinator for the Falcons. Was he offensive coordinator?
He was QB coach.
QB coach. Okay. So just being reported literally right now from Pro Football Talk that he has been hospitalized and is in critical condition from a bicycle accident.
Yikes.
Lots of coaching from a lot of our different football teams. So definitely hope that Greg Knapp is okay.
Thoughts with Greg Knapp, man. That sucks. The last team we're gonna talk about quickly, because the Bucks are like the least interesting team to me, guys. Like, I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but they're just not interesting. Like, they're just deep everywhere, and I look at it and I'm like, if Brady's like he was last year, and he's just still a deep ball assassin, then it's just like, yeah, they should be the favorites. Like, it's that simple. They locked up their core guys. They drafted really well. They have depth everywhere. Their pass rush is legit. Like, I just look up and down. They nailed the Tristan Wirfs pick. I'm like, I don't know why you can talk yourself out of the Bucks as the favorite in the NFC South. Like, where is their weakness, Stephanie?
Their weakness? They don't have one. The Bucks are fine. Like, I think even Vegas should stop disagreeing with this, because I think the Bucks are in a great position to do great this year. I like don't even know where the conversation would be for them. They're bringing back you know how hard it is to bring back an entire roster? Like, come on. That's crazy. I mean, it's nearly impossible to do that and then run it back another year. But if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be Brady. And his team has, with Arians there, you know, even the way that they drafted, they're building a team for the long run as well. It's not just this year, not just until Brady retires. I love the Bucs. It sucks. I hate them, but I love them. Now that Brady is like off the Patriots, I can actually beat them. It's so bad.
Can it ever end? Can it ever end? Like,
yeah, because he's chasing perfection because the Giants. That from him. He doesn't care. He doesn't want to be in the league. He wants perfection. So he's trying to get that perfect record. If he got perfect record, he would retire.
I just want Eli Manning to come back to the NFL for one season.
Yeah.
And just so we could finally end this Tom Brady nightmare.
It will never end.
I will say the one Tom Brady pot, like, I am glad that he won the Belichick war. Like, I love that he won the bet on himself. Like, that is something that I am always going to be happy about, that he won the divorce. Like,
for sure.
That warms my heart that he won the divorce. I will say, Ross, like, when you look at this defense, like, I'm just going to list some names. This is the starters. Ndamukong Suh, Vita Vea, William Golson, Jason Pierre-Paul. They drafted a first-round edge rusher in Joe Tryon, and then you have Devin White, Levante David, Shaq Barrett, Carlton Davis, Antoine Winfield Jr., Jordan Whitehead, and Jamal Dean. Like, there's not one bad player in this rotation. Like,
they traded up to get Jalen Darden. Like, this team is, like, paying attention to the future. Like, this is very much a well-structured team. This team will run it back. Like, I'm serious. The Chiefs are not going back to the Super Bowl this year. I mean that. They're not going back. If either of them is going back, it's the Bucs.
I'm here for the Chiefs slander. In fact, I think we need more of it as much as humanly possible.
Can't stand the Chiefs.
It's just,
I think the only place, the only spot on their defense where they could get a little bit better, and it's not by much, but they could get marginally better, is that cornerback two spot opposite Carlton Davis. Jamal Dean's a good young corner, but if he can get a little bit better, then I think that helps them. He has to take another step forward. He's extremely aggressive, which makes him pretty viable in the run game, which you really like from outside corners, particularly in Tampa 2 coverage, where you have those guys playing, like, you know, out in the flats and playing hook zones and things like that. But you also have a situation to where he bites on double moves quite a bit, gets a little bit off kilter when it comes to play action, gets very aggressive there. And both of these safeties are still very much run support type guys. So if they can take a little bit more of a step forward in coverage, then I think that that's maybe where this defense gets even better. If they do that in 2021, then Tom Brady very well may get that perfect record that he's been chasing. Because then all of a sudden, if they stay healthy and that secondary takes its individual steps forward, then this defense becomes extremely hard to do anything against. And I think Joe Tryon coming out of Washington is going to be somebody that's going to immediately contribute in the defensive line rotation that Tampa Bay loves to go for. These linebackers and their ability to drop back into coverage, having to take those deep middle zones that they take, or those, that's not really deep, but I guess like those robber type depth zones that would usually be for a safety, all those things that they have to do. I think they're remarkably equipped there, but those are spaces where they can see improvement. And if they get that improvement, honestly, even if they don't get that improvement, they're still the favorite to win the NFC South. Like, there's no doubt about that at all. I think their odds are like minus 175. And then after that, when it comes to division, it's the Saints at like plus 320 something. So there's a huge gap in terms of who's favored, who's not favored. But those would be a couple of spots where they can see some improvement. And if they can get that, I think that puts them in a really, really, really good place going into the season.
Yeah, I hate it.
Yeah. I mean, they're good, yo. Like, they're remarkably good. And, you know, Stephanie gave a lot of credit to them maintaining their 11 starters on both sides of the ball. That's tough to do any season, even tougher to do in a Super Bowl season, as she mentioned. And they also kept their entire coaching staff.
I'm glad you mentioned this, because this is something I also was going to. I'm glad you mentioned this, because keeping Todd Bowles and Byron Leftwich is huge for them. Like the fact that they were able to retain Todd Bowles and what he did with this defense last year, like him not getting a head coaching job, which I don't understand, especially when you see who ended up getting jobs like Urban Meyer. I think that's huge for them. Like that is such a huge win for them, that continuity. Like you see it in New Orleans with you, right? Like you get to keep Dennis Allen year after year. Like the fact that you have had Dennis Allen coaching this defense and the continuity there is huge to Sean Payton's success too.
Yeah, it was a big part of the four straight years of playoff run from 2017 to 2020. It was the player retention and it was the coaching staff retention. And some of that comes from like some teams, some coaches just have a hard time creating a coaching tree or getting recognition for a coaching tree. Bruce Arians has been one of those guys for a long time now. Sean Payton's coaching tree just started to maybe like take a little bit of root this season with guys like Joe Lombardi heading over to be offensive coordinators, Dan Campbell saying crazy stuff up in Detroit. Like everybody's kind of moving on and kind of like doing all that stuff. But you'll start to see that from Bruce Arians here eventually too, but it didn't happen at the most important part, which is this potential immediate repeat to the Super Bowl one.
Yeah. Well, let's wrap up here. Your 1-4 prediction, we'll go around and that'll be it for tonight. Ross, 1-4, your predictions for this division. How do you see it going? And how many teams get in the playoffs from this division?
Yeah, I'm going to say that one team gets in the playoffs in this division. That's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I'm going to say that the New Orleans Saints do finish second, but not far away from the Atlanta Falcons, who will finish a close third. And then the Carolina Panthers, still in the midst of figuring things out. They gave their head coach 7 years on purpose. It's going to take a little bit more time to get all this done, but I will give them the last place within the division.
Evan, what about you?
Obviously, we're going to go Bucks number one. I've got to say, man, I think any combination of these three after the Bucks is very plausible. You could explain to me about how Sam Darnold could have some post Adam Gase resurgence and that team really just lights it up. You can explain to me how Jameis Winston finally figures it out with his eye surgery and Sean Payton. You can explain to me with the Falcons being just mediocre enough to edge out two other teams who didn't work out very well. But if I have to pick, I think I'll go Bucks, Saints, Panthers, Falcons.
How dare you? Stephanie, what is your 1-4 for the NFC South?
I will be somewhat different here. So I think the Bucks are an easy, and they're going to take this. You don't bring back an entire roster like this with a division that has a lot of question marks around it. I think that the Panthers are going to surprise people here, so I will take them at second. And I will go Saints and then Atlanta, unfortunately. But Atlanta, the thing with Atlanta too, they just got to fix their fucking defense. Like, you fix that.
What year is this? I've heard this story before. It's a tradition like, unlike any other.
Defense. What do you got? How many times?
We've tried. Vic Beasley, Dante Fowler, Tack McKinley. We've tried.
It's such a good, like, just fix it. You had, like, there's so many ways to go about it. I don't know why no one wants to address it. Figure it out.
We have addressed it. We do. We use
high draft capital. Not enough. Fix it.
Address it correctly. Well, the one thing I will say is AJ Terrell, you had no faith in at the beginning of last season. And he turned out okay.
Well, no. That's revisionist history. That's not what I was saying. I was saying that rookie corners don't help teams that, like, the whole coaching staff's jobs are on the line of making the playoffs. So, Thomas Dimitroff made a choice for Terry Fontenot's administration. Like, that's what I never understood, is that, like, so much was riding on that year, and we knew that that might be it for Julio Jones anyway. And, like, this whole coaching staff, the front office, like, they needed to bounce back and to take a corner in the first round when you're trying to maximize your last window here. Like, CeeDee Lamb just being there, you roll the dice and you see having the number two offensive DVOA, like, what that gets you. Like, I that was my rationale. So it wasn't against AJ Terrell per se. It was just the idea that you were drafting a guy you knew was going to be bad in 2020 when all of y'all's jobs were on the line in 2020. I didn't understand that.
Agreed.
So for me, as we wrap up here, so I have the Bucks. Clearly, they're just in their own tier. I think I'm going to say the Falcons finish number two. I think the Bucks, because I think they're, or the Saints are actually going to try this Taysom Hill stuff a little too much. I think they're going to get too cute. I really do. And I think they're going to finish third at like 7-10. I think the Falcons go 8-9. And then I think the Panthers bottom out at 4-13. And the Darnold experience is a disaster. And Christian McCaffrey doesn't stay healthy per usual. So I'm going to say that things get really bad before they get better in Carolina. And the Falcons finish a little bit ahead of the Saints, because that is what nature intended. The Falcons finishing ahead of the Saints.
I just can't believe how in the same podcast where you're telling us that losing Julio Jones is a big deal, you also can say you think they're going to finish second place in the NFC South.
But it's not even a great thing. Like second in term, like I think Arthur, like the bounce back with going from Dirk Cutter to Arthur Smith is just, I think it's going to be otherworldly. I cannot wait to see this offense with this group in it.
It is a good hire. I do think it's a good hire.
Yeah, for real.
So there you go. Ross, what can we check out from you across the Locked On Network and all your other Saints coverage? What can we check out from you this week?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a lot coming up with training camp, of course, right around the corner. So you could check out everything going on with Locked On Saints, as well as any of your favorite teams. Just search Locked On, and then whatever your favorite team name is. We cover all NFL, NBA, NHL, MLB, and college sports. So go ahead and check out your favorite show there. I'm also hosting on Tuesdays over the Locked On NFL podcast, doing national coverage there. And then writing over at CanalStreetChronicles.com, the SB Nation site covering the New Orleans Saints. So lots of different places to catch out all of the work, whether you are a Saints fan or otherwise. I appreciate y'all having me on. It's been a lot of fun.
I appreciate it, Ross. Evan, 49ers Hub, you can find you on Twitter at Evan_swords now. No more.
Evan, yeah. No. Yeah, it doesn't look like I'm getting the OG account back anytime soon, so we had to go with a somewhat professional name. Rest in peace to two Evan, too furious. You guys can definitely check out.
Tragic.
Yes, sad panda. But you can check out Ross Jackson's stuff over at Locked On. Definitely check out Stephanie Small's stuff with Small Talk. And then, of course, the Chase Thomas podcast. That's what I'd like to shout out.
That there it is. There's that loyalty. I love it, Evan. There it is. I love when you get angry about people not doing what they need to do, which is what, Evan? What do people need to do when they listen?
You go on that fucking Apple podcast and you give them a 5-star review. Stop being a little bitch about it. Don't act like you're too busy. You're not too busy. You're laying down in your bed or you're driving in a car. There's no logical reason why you can't just go and do the 5-star review. Just to be a nice person. Like, you haven't done it. You haven't been a nice person in a month. You're mean to your parents. You're mean to your friends. You're lazy. Just do this one thing that's nice for once. For once. Just one time.
Incredible.
That's outstanding.
Incredible. All right. Evan Swords, Stephanie Smalls, Ross Jackson, thank you so much for the time. I greatly appreciate it. Stephanie and Evan will be back next week with another guest to preview the NFC West division. Evan is...
Steph's not going anywhere, no matter what. Exactly. Locking her in.
I think we're locking this in here.
All right. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. We'll talk to y'all soon.
All right. It's good talking to you guys.
Thank y'all.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.